I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. Joining me now is Judy Tayabji. She is the CEO of Tugboat Enterprises, a software company based in Powell River, where she joins me from this morning. We're going to talk politics, what with the federal election in full swing, with a look at BC and how it'll play out. Judy Tayabji is a former member of the BC Legislature, one of the youngest MLAs ever elected. She has written two books, Political Affairs and Daggers Unsheathed. She's also hosted programs on television and radio. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Judy Tayabji. Good morning, Ms. Tayabji-Wilson.
And good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Are you a member of a political party now?
Yes, actually. I've been a member of the Federal Liberal Party, well, for most of the last 25 years, I guess.
When the last time I interviewed was 8 years ago.
Right.
When your husband was running for the leadership of the NDP.
Yes.
He lost his seat the following year. Was that the last time the both of you were involved in politics?
Yes. At the time, I was elected locally to the city council and also served on the regional district. But since then, we've been out of politics. We have been involved with the Federal Liberal Party, but otherwise, we're not active provincially at all.
Do you miss it at all? Do you miss being part of it?
Well, it's a funny question because I think there's a certain kind of person who puts their hand up when someone says, okay, who's going to do the following, and when it's politics. If that's part of your nature, then yes, you miss the dynamic of being in the fray, of being part of the strategy, of being part of the public policy debate. There's no question about that. But there's the other side to modern politics where it's almost this mob mentality, and people who really don't, frequently you'll have people who are not informed, but they can yell really loudly. And so they end up capturing the attention of whether it's the media or a blog or whatever, and they can just have a completely incoherent rant. But that takes the whole level of debate down to that level, and that's unfortunate. I don't miss that at all. That's extremely frustrating, because if you care about the issues and if you are in that arena because you want to see change happen, and you have to suddenly deal with a commentary that is barely sensible, but is the commentary of the day, it takes you off the very reason that you're in politics.
Is that the reason why you're not active provincially?
Yes, I think that would be pretty much a bingo. I'm so frustrated with what's going on provincially. I feel like we have a rerun of the mid-80s where you had private enterprise versus left-wing ideology. And then you've got the majority of British Columbians in the middle going, look, I'm not part of the private club that gets to benefit from Olympic contracts, and I'm not someone who's a rabid ideologue, so there's nowhere for me. And that's kind of how I feel about our provincial politics right now.
But despite getting out of politics, it's sort of like the case of getting the person out of politics but not getting the politics out of the person. You're following this campaign closely, are you?
Oh, very much so, actually. We're quite involved in it. And as I said, I'm probably fifth-generation political activist in my family, so maybe sixth-generation, so previously in India. So it's not something that you choose, you know.
Yeah.
No, we've been involved in this riding federally. The candidate is Ian Sutherland. This is an extremely colorful riding. I'd say one of the most interesting in the country, and you'd have to say notorious, really, because last time, Blair Wilson was the candidate, and I hadn't supported him in the nomination. I supported John Moonen, who is a long time, I think I've known John since I was about 18, and he's somebody who always works in the background, and he was running for the nomination. But Blair won the nomination, and so, of course, you know, as a member of the party, we put together a little fundraiser for him and put some signs up. We weren't that involved, but I think we helped him get elected. And then after he was elected, he disappeared. So long before there was any kind of allegations of wrongdoing, he had pretty much alienated every member of the federal party in Powell River, because you couldn't get a phone call back. He was invisible. He made commitments to people that he didn't follow up on. And I had taken some concerns to the party executive previously to just say, you know, this guy's not even around. What are we going to do? And then when the allegations started to come up of all the lawsuits and the non-payment of taxes and the family problems, although we received the most attention, I'm not sure that they were the most problematic. And then for Blair to be resurrected as the Green Party candidate in this riding is really odd. And then, of course, we've had Dana Larson, who was the Marijuana Party founder, running for the NDP, and now he's gone. And so it's just it's a very strange riding. It's a very strange dynamic. And I think we're really lucky because in the Liberal Party, we have Ian Sutherland. He's a very credible candidate. He's the mayor of Squamish. He understands small towns, but he can also operate in the West Vancouver arena. So I think we'll do very well with him. But it's very strange times.
Well, West Vancouver Sunshine Coast is a very large riding, is it?
Yes. No.
I live in Vancouver, and sort of give me sort of perspective on the size of it.
Right.
How would you describe it? Would be Vancouver and
what? Well, I think you'd have to say it's sort of Germany and half of France, I think, is pretty much the size of the riding.
Yeah.
It's Squamish, Whistler, West Vancouver, the Sunshine Coast, the Lower Sunshine Coast, Powell River, Texada, the outlying areas. And, I mean, when you think of just in terms of physical geography, Powell River, and in terms of the Powell River Regional District and Powell River, is the size of Belgium, and that's only one small component of this riding. This is a big riding. And although West Vancouver get to pretty much carry the lion's share of the votes, you cannot win this riding without Powell River and Squamish. And I think that's probably because they're very cohesive communities, they're resource-dependent, the people talk to each other a lot, so you can get a sea change in support because of one or two issues that those communities rally around. Whereas in West Vancouver, there's probably, you've got the two main parties. You've got the Conservatives and the Liberals fighting for votes, but it doesn't generally swing heavily one way or the other unless you have a major federal issue. So this time it'll probably be pretty close with the two major candidates. And, you know, the NDP are going to be kind of behind the eight ball now. They've nominated Bill Forst, who is a really nice guy, I think a very good candidate, but not a politician, and I think he's just going to carry the banner for them.
The Conservative candidate, that's the same guy from last time?
It is. It's John Weston, and he had some very big shoes to fill because John Reynolds was the larger-than-life member of Parliament we had here, of course, formerly a very popular social credit cabinet minister provincially, who went into the Reform Party, and I think added a lot of class and depth to the way they were doing politics, and I think he was very much the godfather behind Stephen Harper's minority when last time he brought in some very traditional players in the Conservatives in Ottawa behind the scenes. And John's not that engaged this time, and I think you can see that in the way the campaign is playing out, that it's sort of almost back to the Reform days.
So when you talk about two major candidates in that riding,
mm-hmm.
you're talking about Ian Sutherland?
Yes.
And who's, is it Wilson or is it?
No, it's John Weston.
Certainly?
Yeah, John Weston is the fellow who ran last time, and he's been somewhat visible this time. As I understand it, and these are internal numbers, so, I mean, I don't have a piece of paper I could produce with this, but this is generally the buzz, is that before the Liberals nominated, Weston had about a 17-point lead, and they're running neck and neck now, so... I'm not surprised by that. John Weston doesn't have the charisma of John Reynolds. He seems like a perfectly adequate candidate for the Conservatives. I don't mean to damn him with faint praise, but in 2 years he hasn't shown himself to be a shining star in the riding. And he may, you know, it may be that that he would do a very good job. I don't know. I haven't felt compelled by his passion, if that makes any sense. I can't even tell you a single thing he said in 2 years.
So the only reason, if he would do well, mm-hmm. would be if the Conservatives really did well nationally and it sort of spilled over in West Vancouver, Sunshine Coast. Is that correct?
I think that's fair because unlike Ian Sutherland, who has an existing constituency as a mayor of Squamish, he's had, I think he's on council and then it's his second term as mayor. It helps to have a base of voters who are used to voting for you. And John Weston doesn't have that. He comes out of the business sector. So he can't add that. They often say that the local candidate can add or subtract up to about 8% in a riding. And when a riding is close, if you have a real star candidate, that'll often be the difference between them taking the riding or not. But if you have a candidate who isn't that strong, then yeah, it has to be the federal campaign that puts them over the edge.
And Blair Wilson going to the Greens, that Green support throughout the nation, that won't have anything to do, I mean, he's just toast. Is that correct?
I think it's over. You know, I don't know if he's running so he can get his severance package, and I have no idea what would possess Elizabeth May to bring him in, other than the fact that he has a seat in the House, but that's not, you know, that doesn't seem very compelling to me. I think, I compare it to the last provincial election. The last time Gordon ran in this riding provincially, Gordon Wilson that I'm talking about, Adrian Carr was the leader of the provincial Green Party, and everybody said, oh, she's in the debate, she's going to do what Gordon Wilson did with the Liberals, she's going to elect everybody, and they put out these polls saying that she was running second to Harold Long, and all of our phoning showed that that wasn't correct. I mean, she was a distant third, but because she was claimed to be polling in second place, she pulled votes from Gordon because people thought, oh, well, in order to defeat the Harold Long, who had been a Socred MLA who was running for the Liberals, we have to vote Green. So all she ended up doing was defeating Gordon because he was running in first place. Harold was second and she was third. And so she ended up taking enough votes. So she couldn't even get herself elected, and that was at a time when there was green fever in BC. So I don't think Elizabeth May is going to get any seats. She might pull, you know, maybe she'll pull double digits in the popular vote. I don't know.
The relationship between Elizabeth May and Stéphane Dion nationally,
yeah,
there's a lot of talk that there's something going on there in terms of a coalition of sorts. You see that in Dion's own writing and in Elizabeth May's own writing. Mm-hmm. I think they're not running a candidate in Bill Casey's writing in Nova Scotia, if I'm not mistaken, if that's where he is. Do you think that whatever work that they're doing together, the two parties, will that have anything to do with what will happen in West Vancouver, Sunshine Coast?
I think the only effect in terms of, if you look at politics as a chess game, the reason that Dion moved those pieces on the board in that way is that he wanted to enter the race with a strong environmental brand. And he knew he could get attention as an environmentalist if he was prepared to make a concession at the beginning on one or two seats with the Green Party. And I believe what will end up happening is, especially in this riding where a lot of people who may have voted Green will not vote for Blair Wilson, they will feel comfortable putting those votes with the Liberal candidate who, Ian Sutherland himself is Green, and the campaign, in fact, the federal Liberal campaign has at times been criticized for being too Green. I don't think you can be too Green these days. I think people are quite concerned about the environment. And provided it's not economy or environment, it's economy with environment, I think people can feel comfortable. So I don't think it'll have, as I say, the only impact it'll have in this riding is making people who would vote Green feel comfortable voting Liberal. But they might vote NDP instead.
What do you make of the Dion campaign? I mean, everyone seems to not be that enthusiastic about him and his leadership. What are they saying within the party?
I think within the party, people are waiting for the spotlight to be on Dion long enough that the voters can make an unedited assessment of him. If you watch, I'd like to sort of compare it to the leadership race that Dion won. Dion didn't win that leadership race by fluke. He didn't win it because at the beginning he had the nicest smile, and it wasn't a popularity contest where he charmed everybody. He earned the spot, and he surprised everybody, including me. I supported Michael Ignatieff, and I wasn't happy when I was watching the convention, and I was seeing Dion maneuvering through, and I'm like, this guy's going to win. Nobody saw that coming. But when he gave his speech, I mean, I was moved. I can't remember the last time I heard a speech that was so sincere and so relevant to me on the national level. And so, for me, that was a learning experience as a Liberal, saying, I mean, I'm a Liberal, which means I'm supposed to be paying more attention than the average person, and I completely underestimated him. So I've been watching his moves before this federal campaign, thinking, okay, he's trying to position himself as it's like a horse race. He's trying to make sure he's in a spot where he can overtake the leader in the final stretch. And I think he has, and I think that most people in the party, contrary to sort of the buzz you hear, I think they're starting to say, okay, he knows he's got a very strong team around him. In Powell River, for example, we have Bob Ray coming up with our candidate. Well, that's huge because Powell River is a community where a lot of people would really find Bob Ray to be a national leader. They would have liked him perhaps to even win the leadership, to have Bob Ray come here. And Bob Ray will say, and I know he will when he comes, he'll say, Stéphane Dion is the best leader we could have for our times, and he will do a good job as Prime Minister. And bringing that message here directly, I mean, we couldn't even get, with previous representatives, we couldn't get cabinet ministers here, much less a former Premier of Ontario. And last week we said, here's our list of people who, if you brought them here, would do well. And next thing you know, Bob Ray's here. I think Ken Dryden's coming in a couple of weeks. So it's a very, very organized campaign below the surface. And I think that that will show in the last 10 days of the campaign.
It makes me wonder, though, Bob Ray, Ken Dryden, mm-hmm. did they seem more attractive than having Stéphane Dion in your riding?
Stéphane Dion would do very well up here, but he's got to do the major population centers, and I think that's good tactics. I mean, if your strategy is to play to your strengths, then tactically you have to send people who don't need to be in the core campaign but are still strong performers into the periphery. And then knowing that you need Powell River and you need Squamish to win the riding, but you need West Vancouver before you need us. If you haven't won West Vancouver, you're not even in the game. So Stéphane Dion is actually in Vancouver. There's a number of fundraisers and receptions next week, so he'll be quite visible. But we don't need him up here. They can send Bob Ray and get as much bang for their buck, or almost as much.
And in terms of the Liberal leadership, what does Dion have to do on October 14th to remain there?
I think what he has to do, first of all, he has to not stumble. He has to continue to build, continue to make centrist economic proposals like what we've seen in terms of the economy, continue to say that Harper has blown the surplus, that we're the worst performing economy in the G8. That resonates with people, and all he has to do is conjure up the specter of before the federal Liberals took over from the Conservatives last time, what a mess we were in financially. And I think he's done that very successfully. And when he gets into the debate, he'll do it again. But in addition to that, it's not enough to criticize the other guy. He has to say, look, let's be worried about what these guys will do, but here's what I'm going to do. And the things that he has been doing is going to the universities and saying, we need to give students a break on these loans. It's expensive enough to live without carrying the burden of bank interest rates. So the announcement the other day of prime plus 0.5%, that's beautiful. The announcement on child care, the people who care about those issues are going to hear what he's saying. He has to keep doing that. So he has to have a message that resonates with the larger group, but he also has to keep going into those sectors and have something that makes sense economically, but also resonates with what people need to hear, that the Liberals are going back to being Liberals again, that there will be social policies that will ensure that this is what Canada is. Just to give you kind of a funny snapshot, when Gordon and I were following the Democratic Convention, and Obama gave a speech, and it was like, wow, what a great speech. You know, Gordon turns to me and he says, well, that's great if the Americans are going to put that in place, but in Canada, we've had that for 30 years. So we've had it for 30 years because the Liberals put it in. They were nagged by the NDP, who were never in power, but they were in power and they made it happen. Now, the Conservatives have dismantled some of our social programs, and it's up to Dion to tell us, to tell Canadians, the Liberal Party is the party that stands for the things that define Canada as a country of hope and prosperity in the G8. That's what he needs to do, and I think he's going to.
In the upcoming debates in a couple weeks or so,
yeah.
Do you think there'll be a Gordon Wilson moment there, and who do you think will emerge with that? Do you think it's Elizabeth May?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I can't see it. Do I think there's a Gordon Wilson moment? Well, I'm pretty biased. Like, how can I possibly give you something independent? I think Gordon Wilson's pretty special. But having said that, if I can just even speak as a political analyst and not as his wife, I think actually he's a very articulate politician. I'm not sure we have anyone with his skills of oratory in that debate. However, I do think we're going to see, it'll be a test of who do Canadians, at the end of the debate, who do they trust with their country? And I think what Stephen Harper has going for him in that debate, unlike Mulroney, is people don't think he's a crook. Okay, so even if you don't like his politics, you can think he's a basically honest guy. However, I don't think that he represents philosophically an ideology that most Canadians feel comfortable with. I think he's too right-wing for most Canadians. And so that's why he's only been able to get minority numbers, because people don't mind giving him the keys to the shop, but they don't want to make him the permanent manager, because they're not sure what he'd do with the shop if he were left, you know, with being able to make all the decisions. If Dion can come out of that and be focused and sincere and articulate the vision for Canada that represents most Canadians, he may not have that sort of flashpoint moment, but I think he will get enough momentum to pull ahead, which really, frankly, is only about 5%. And, you know, the person who may end up being most quotable of that debate is someone I haven't talked about very much, and that's Jack Layton. Jack Layton is good on his feet. He has very memorable comments. And unlike Dion, who has a language issue in English, he's very, you know, he's very well-spoken. So Layton may end up getting a good quip in there, and he may do very well in terms of seats, but I don't think he'll do any official opposition moments. I mean, he might surprise everybody.
This has been fun, Judy, and just to wrap up, what's Tugboat Enterprises about?
Well, we have, we're a startup software company that is about to cross the chasm in terms of our performance. We've been working on this for about 4 years. We do a form of data recovery nobody else does yet, and what that means is if your Windows computer crashes, we can get your data out without you having to call in a technician. We give the end users the ability, through a USB key or a bootable CD, to grab their files from their broken computer. And it's a phenomenal technology. I'm not going to give you a heavy sell here because I know that's not really what you're about to, but we're now talking to some very major players about enterprise deals. I'm very excited about what we've managed to do. It's kind of the opposite of politics. It's just business.
And you enjoy your work now?
I love my job. I love my job. I love the people who work with me. I love being in software. I'm a total geek. I love to be on my computer. And it's Gordon and I work very well together, whether it's business or politics. So, but he just wants to be a writer. That's his next thing. He's like, oh, I just got to get past the business stage. I want to go be a writer.
Yeah, you know, I was rereading part of your books.
Yeah.
In preparing for this, and you're a pretty good writer yourself. I know it sounds patronizing, but
no, it doesn't sound patronizing. I appreciate it. Every writer wants to know that people like their work.
Why aren't you writing a blog or anything like that?
You know what? That's on my list of to-dos, and I think that's the next thing I'll have. We actually have launched a blog with our company about a couple of weeks ago, and I was posting stuff on my Facebook page to sort of get it ready for the blog. And I just haven't had time, but I love writing. That is something I love to do, and I actually will probably, I want to do a video blog. I had a TV show for a couple of years, and we've got multimedia production capacity in the office here. We've got a couple of camera operators who are also computer programmers, so I've actually been saying to them, look, we've got to go online, you know, and do a video blog, a vlog, right? So it's on the list. You know, maybe we'll be able to do it by Christmas.
Judy, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today, and I enjoyed it.
Okay, thanks, Joseph.
Her website is tugboatenterprises.com. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Lana.